Hello and welcome. This is episode number 32 of the show, and it's growing larger by the week. So thanks to all the new listeners and to the old. I appreciate every one of you. Today I have things. No surprise there, eh? But we'll get to those in a minute, because first I want to remind you that there are many ways to listen to the show. You can listen using the player on the homepage, that's 3things.podomatic.com, or you can subscribe on iTunes, or use any number of RSS aggregators like Gator or Google or Yahoo or many others. There are also lots of ways to leave me comments or ask questions on or about the show. On the homepage, you can leave text comments, or you can record comments, or use the call-in line listed on the right-hand side of the page, or you can send an email or MP3 to me, Jenna, your hostess, to 3things@podomatic.com. That's the number 3, the word things, at podomatic.com. So now, all that said, let's get to the show. And thing one today, did you know that today's cigarettes deliver more nicotine? Well, they do. A new report released by the Massachusetts Department of Health indicates that the amount of nicotine delivered to smokers' lungs by each cigarette they smoke has risen about 10% in the past 6 years. This means that healthcare providers trying to help smokers quit may have to adjust the strength of nicotine replacement therapies like nicotine patches and gums. The level of nicotine that smokers typically consume per cigarette has risen around 10% in just the past 6 years, making it harder to quit and easier to get hooked, according to a new report released Tuesday by the Massachusetts Department of Health. The study shows a steady climb in the amount of nicotine delivered to the lungs of smokers, regardless of brand, with overall nicotine yields increasing by about 10%. Massachusetts is one of 3 states to require tobacco companies to submit information about nicotine testing according to its specifications, and the only state with data going back to 1998. Public Health Commissioner Paul Coate Jr. called the findings significant, and I think they are. The study found that the 3 most popular cigarette brands with young smokers, Marlboro, Newport, and Camel, delivered significantly more nicotine than they did 6 years ago. Nicotine consumed in Kool, a popular menthol brand, rose by 20%, for example. Jennifer Gullish, a spokesperson for Altria Group's Philip Morris USA, the nation's largest cigarette maker and manufacturer of Marlboro cigarettes, declined comment. R.J. Reynolds Tobacco, manufacturer of Kool and Camel cigarettes, also declined. Reynolds is part of Reynolds American, by the way. The study has always measured nicotine levels based on the way smokers actually use cigarettes, health officials said. For example, by partially covering ventilation holes as they smoke and taking longer puffs. Traditional testing methods, which don't take real-life smoking habits into account, typically report lower nicotine contents, researchers said. The amount of nicotine in a cigarette has increased steadily over the past 6 years, the department said, indicating in its reports that smoking habits simulated had not changed in that period. In 1998, 84% of 116 brands tested fell into the highest range. Of the 179 cigarette brands tested in 2004 for the report, 93% fell into the highest range for nicotine. We want healthcare providers to know that smokers are getting more nicotine than in the past and may need additional help in trying to quit, Coate said. Smokers who choose light brands hoping to reduce their nicotine intake are out of luck, according to the report that found for all brands tested in 1998 and 2004, there was no significant difference in the total nicotine delivered between full flavor, medium, light, or ultralight cigarettes. How's that grab ya? Well, if it weren't easy enough to get hooked on them before and hard enough to quit too, there is now more nicotine. I will decline to comment on things like large companies and consumer manipulation and the like, but dang y'all, that's just mean. I mean, for real, people are already smoking you rich, can't you give some people a break and take out a little bit of the poison? Just a little? It's not like they'll suddenly quit buying smokes from ya. Oy. Well, there you are. Perhaps just being a little angry over the addition of more nicotine will inspire someone to quit smoking, just for revenge against the cigarette makers. It's a hope anyway. I want you all to live a long, long time. And I think I'm now finished with the cigarette thing number one for today. For now. And now, yes, I know you've been waiting for it. It's time for the grandiloquent word of the day. I'm so excited. This is show number 32 of Three Things, and that means we are back to one of my favorite 26 letters, the sixth letter in the alphabet, the fantastic, the fantabulous, the frabjous letter F. I really do like the letter F because you can draw it out so very dramatically, like you can with the letter S, but that's a horse of a different color. Today, it's the F. And our word that begins with F today is the word frisson. It is pronounced frisson. It is spelled F-R-I-S-S-O-N. And it is a noun, meaning a shudder of excitement that courses through the body, or a moment of intense excitement, an emotional thrill. Etymologically speaking, frisson comes from the French, from Old French, frigon, a trembling, ultimately from Latin, frigere, to be cold. Used in a sentence for you, the end of the tale arouses a frisson of terror. So there you go. New word for you to dazzle your enemies and make new friends with. There are many more to be found on the Grandiloquent Dictionary online, the link to which can be found on the homepage of this show, www.podomatic.com. You should give them both a visit. It can only be good for you. It may even send a frisson of excitement through you. And thing number two today, Google lets literature lovers download classics for free. That's right, and isn't that great? So Google, a favorite site of mine and many others, has added a new feature to its book search program this week that allows users to download and print classic novels and obscure books that are in the public domain, of course, for free. Searchers can also run keyword searches within the text of the manuscript, or even print them to paper. The program that gives readers the ability to view, browse, and read the full text of books that are in the public domain launched this last Wednesday. Google's Book Search service offers searchers free downloadable PDF files of classic titles like Dante's Inferno, Sir Isaac Newton's Principia, and Ferriar's The Bibliomania. Until now, the service only allowed people to read the out-of-copyright books online. This utter treasure, by the way, can be found on books.google.com. Google supports the free service by displaying small keyword-generated text ads on search results pages. Google's latest extension of its books program does not include any books currently under copyright. For books protected by copyright, users will just get basic background such as the book's title and the author's name and a few lines of text related to their searches, as well as information where they can buy or borrow specific books. Google's books initiative has much of the publishing industry up in arms. The firm has been the target of two lawsuits since it launched the project last year. The Association of American Publishers and the Authors Guild both filed suit against the search titan, asserting that Google should seek the permission of copyright holders before digitizing books. Google insists that the text it displays constitutes fair use. Many educators have sided with the internet company by supporting its Books Library project, of which Google Book Search is a byproduct. As its name suggests, the Google Books Library project digitizes books from major libraries around the world and makes their collections searchable on Google Book Search. Recently, the University of California agreed to allow the company to digitize and make searchable books from collections housed at its more than 100 libraries across its 10 campuses. The University of Michigan, Harvard University, Stanford University, Oxford University, and the New York Public Library are also part of the project. Publishers and authors that have taken issue with Google over its library project do not object to its use of works that are in the public domain, according to Alan Adler, Vice President of Legal and Government Affairs for the AAP. However, Adler told Tech News World that the literary work that is in the public domain must be separated from the book in which it is published. Works by Shakespeare or Dickens or any of the other classics that are in the public domain are published in new editions every year that are used in literature classes, Adler noted. Those are typically critical editions that include not only the literary work itself, but additional commentary and analyses that are themselves in copyright and protected as such. Google could not be immediately reached for comment. Like its many other software and content initiatives, Google's book project gives people one more reason to visit the search giant's site, where they can be exposed to displays from Google's advertiser network. Google generates much of its profits through paid search advertising programs. Google on Tuesday announced that users could also add Google Book Search to their sites by copying and pasting a few simple lines of code. That's pretty neat. Last week, Google launched Library Catalog Search, a book search feature aimed at making it easier for readers to find library books. I happen to think that anything or anyone that gets books into the public domain, however or by whatever medium, deserves applause, kudos, and free food at fancy restaurants, drinks included. So that's that said, and thing number two, finito.
Just pathetic. You're always broke. Your homemade Star Trek uniform really ain't impressing me. You're suffering from delusions of adequacy.
Now for my new segment, This Day in History. I've always loved knowing what special and interesting things happened on the day I'm living, only in the past, So I decided to add this segment so I can share it with you, my friends, how I adore you all. So I'm just going to get on with it. In AD 12, Caligula, the big nut, the Roman emperor, was born on this day. In 1422, King Henry V of England died, and Henry VI, aged 9 months, acceded the throne as King of England. In 1569, Jahangir, Mughal emperor, was born. In 1688, John Bunyan, English author, died. Apparently, nothing I could find happened on this day in the 1700s. In 1888, the body of Marianne Polly Nichols, the first victim of Jack the Ripper, was found mutilated in Buck's Row, London. In 1913, Bernard Lovell, British astronomer, very smart guy, was born. In 1990, East and West Germany signed the Reunification Treaty. What a day. In 1994, the IRA agreed to a complete cessation of military operations. In 1997, the beautiful and beloved Diana, Princess of Wales, her companion Dodi Fayed, and their driver were killed in a car crash in the Place d'Alma underpass in Paris, France. Seems to have been a rather interesting day, this one, in history that is. For me, this time, this day, was publication day, which is always cool, and I had a really nice bowl of soup. I hope yours was even more exciting than that. And last but never least, thing number three. Can a bit of Arctic change the way we feel about delicious, creamy ice cream forever? In its quest to create ice cream as voluptuous as butter and as virtuous as broccoli, the ice cream industry has probed the depths of the Arctic Ocean, studied the intimate structures of algae, and foisted numerous failures on consumers. I have tried them all as they came down the pike, dairy-free, fat-free, sugar-free, with tofu, yogurt, rice, whatever, said Linda Calhoun, a teacher who lives near Flagstaff, Arizona, cataloging the disappointments she had tasted over the years. They always make me sad, she said. Me too. For people who spend each summer wrestling with temptation, there is fresh hope in the freezer case. New industrial processes, including one that involves a protein cloned from the blood of an Arctic Ocean fish, have allowed manufacturers to produce very creamy, dense, reduced-fat ice creams with fewer additives. The new products appeal to those who have acquired a taste for super-premium high-fat ice cream but cannot stomach its fat content. Almost all commercial ice creams contain industrial ingredients that mimic the effects of butterfat and egg yolks. Some are natural, like carrageenan, extracted from algae plentiful in the Irish Sea, and others are synthetic, like mono and diglycerides. But using new technologies can be risky for manufacturers. The other new method for making super creamy ice cream was caught up last month in the global debate over genetically modified foods. In June, Unilever, the Anglo-Dutch conglomerate, applied to Britain's Food Standards Agency for permission to use a new ingredient in its frozen desserts, a protein cloned from the blood of an eel-like Arctic Ocean fish, the ocean pout. Instead of extracting the protein from the fish, which Unilever describes as not sustainable or economically feasible, the company developed a process for making it by altering the genetic structure of a strain of baker's yeast so that it produces that protein during fermentation. This ingredient, called an ice structuring protein, has been approved by the Food and Drug Administration and is used by Unilever to make some products in the United States already, like some popsicles and a new line of Breyers Light double-churned ice cream bars, which are yummy. Ice structuring proteins protect the fish, which would otherwise die in freezing temperatures, said H. Douglas Goff, professor of dairy sciences at the University of Guelph in Ontario. They also make ice cream creamier by preventing ice crystals from growing. In Britain, where Unilever's Cornetto cone is as iconic as the fudgesicle is in the United States, the news media have leapt in with headlines about vanilla ice cream. Emphasis on the eel bit of that. Britain, like the rest of the European Union, requires labeling for any food that has contact with genetically altered material, even if that substance is not present in the finished product. In its application, Unilever stressed that no DNA or other material from fish is used in the process, but genetically modified foods have yet to gain wide acceptance from the European public, and Unilever has found itself the unwilling center of attention. I can't tell you how many times I've had to explain that no, the Cornetto will not taste fishy, said Trevor Gorin, head of media relations for Unilever in the United Kingdom. For consumers, the benefit is that ice structuring proteins and low temperature extrusion have raised the creaminess bar, and I'm all for that. The ice cream produced with the new methods are simply better than any ice creams have ever been, Goff said, quite definitely better in texture and much better tasting. The quest has always been for the taste and texture of full-fat ice cream, said Tyler Johnston of Edie's. Since the 1980s, it's been about adding ingredients, he said, referring to the gels and gums that commercial producers churn into reduced-fat ice cream to improve and stabilize its texture. Now we have a complicated process, but the recipe can be simplified. Goff said that outside the United States, the significance of the new technologies would be noted not on the palate, but on the pallet. American companies are getting ready to export ice cream to China, India, and the Philippines, he said, and these are places that have very real cold chain issues, referring to the challenge of keeping ice cream consistently frozen throughout the shipping process. Products produced with the new technologies are less affected by partial thawing than traditional ice creams are, which become dry, sticky, and hard in fluctuating temperatures, and nobody wants that. Ice crystals are everyone's enemy in ice cream, said Arnold Carborn, the head of Ben & Jerry's research lab in South Burlington, Vermont. Ben & Jerry's, now also owned by Unilever, does not use either new process. Ice cream is an emulsion of air, fat, and water, and emulsions are always fragile because the elements always want to separate. Every time ice cream thaws even slightly, the emulsion is compromised and the ice crystals combine into larger, jagged crystals that just destroy the ice cream's texture. This is the drama of the cold chain, Carbone said. Every minute that ice cream sits on a loading dock, it suffers incredible abuse. There should be a law against that, I think. Goff, whose lab is working on a process of extracting ice structuring proteins from winter wheat, has a low-tech solution for avoiding crystallization. It's simple, he said. Never leave a container of ice cream unfinished. I tend to agree with him about leaving ice cream unfinished, but I do not agree with the brain freeze that often accompanies eating a small container. At least I know now, though, having done a spot on Three Things about it before, that if you do get a case of brain freeze, all you have to do is shove your tongue up against the roof of your mouth for a few seconds, and that will bring down the temperature on the top of your mouth and lessen the level of discomfort. It's amazing what you can learn if you listen to this show. I also have learned, in a general way, when to stop talking, like I should do right now. Eat all of your supper. You can't have any ice cream if you don't eat your supper. That's thing number three today. Finished.
Come gather round, kids. Do you know that everything's bigger here in America? We've got the biggest cars, the biggest buildings, and even the biggest corporate empires. Why not tell you a story about a store started in Arkansas about 40 years ago, and this store would become one of the biggest corporations in the country. But you know what they always say? Nothing is ever perfect. Fred Johnson is barely getting by in life. He's got four different kids with four different wives. He's the working class man, the backbone of America, who's gotta feed his progeny, Mary, Mark, and Erica. Mark has the flu and Mary's got an ear infection, so Fred gets a job at Walmart in the home and garden section. Wishes he were compensated when he worked overtime, or at least he'd be paid above the poverty line. He's got mouths to feed, alimony to pay, so he shows up on time and goes home late every day. When he gets his first check, he can't believe his eyes, like he was Piggy and Walmart was Lord of the Flies. He's a hard-working dude, but can't understand why the Walls worth $10 billion and he's still still a starving man. He qualifies for medical in two more years, but for now he uses Tylenol to ease his kids' tears.
Now remind me why I took this job again.
This is how we do it in a Walmart nation. Ethics out the door in a Walmart nation. Down the mom and pops with no hesitation. Our workers next to nothing in a Walmart nation. Welcome to the high cost of a low price.
Yo ho, yo ho, a Walmart life for me. But predatory pricing is corporate piracy. But hey, we let it go because the prices are so low. They sell discounts by the pound and it just goes to show. A corporate empire for the modern ages. But now they pay Americans third world wages. A sweatshirt that you bought in South Carolina was made in a sweatshop in Beijing, China. Spending billions a year on Chinese trade. It supports a deficit, but Robbie Walton's got it made. They give millions to the president and he loves them back. How can Democrats complain when they even hire blacks? Sex discrimination, women never get promotions.
Never.
Employ illegal aliens, never. Never a commotion.
Nunca.
Comes with the Christian rice, so they're contraceptive free. Veggie Tales on DVD won't prevent teen pregnancy. Sorry, ladies.
This is how we do it in a Walmart nation. Ethics out the door in a Walmart nation. Down the mom and pops with no hesitation. Our workers next to nothing in a Walmart nation. Welcome to the high cost of a low price.
Unprecedented acquisition. Walmart has purchased the entire city of New York. Discussions are now underway to change the city's name to New Walmart. New York citizens are reminded that the company has nothing but benevolent intentions for them, that if they don't like it, they're free to leave.
Dear Fred,
we'd like to thank you for your long-term dedication, working 20 years in the same location. Show appreciation for being on our team. Here's a coupon for 2 pints of free chocolate ice cream. Fred's almost 80 now with a painful pleurisy. No more currency in Social Security. His kids work at Walmart. What else would they do? Because no one else is hiring in 2062.
Go Walmart, it's your birthday.
This is how we do it in a Walmart nation. Fred, ethics out the door in a Walmart nation. Down the mom and pops with no hesitation. Pay our workers next to nothing in a Walmart nation.
Welcome to the wall. Well, kids, that's the story of Walmart. Always low prices, always taking advantage of people. Sleep tight now, you hear?
And here's a little bit of space stuff. Just because I love it so, I thought I would toss in a bit about this space blob that is shedding a bit of light on cosmic evolution. A green, red, and purple blob of stars in deep space, spotted by the most powerful X-ray orbiting telescope, could offer clues about why galaxies tend to herd with one another over time. The colorful object is actually the sizzling hot core of a small pack of galaxies viewed in remarkable detail by the Chandra X-ray Observatory. The gas between galaxies in such groups burns at roughly 10 million degrees Celsius, too hot for an optical telescope to handle, but ideal for the X-ray vision of Chandra. You should search Google Images for an image of HCG 62, and you'll know what I'm talking about when I say the purples and reds in the center reveal the highest X-ray emissions in this group, and the greens indicate less bright regions. HCG 62 could represent a missing link between the early and late evolution of the universe, according to Chandra scientists who released the image this week. Astronomers speculate that when the universe was young, galaxies began to congregate in small groups similar to HCG 62, and later such groups perhaps combined with their peers to form larger galaxy clusters, the largest objects known in the universe. Most stars in the cosmos reside in galactic groups or small clusters. Our own Milky Way is a member of the aptly named Local Group, along with 24 other galaxies such as Andromeda and the Magellanic Clouds. Launched in 1999, Chandra offers the most detailed X-ray observations ever of the heavens. The NASA Observatory is operated by the Harvard Smithsonian Center for Astrophysics. Now, if that isn't interesting, at least in some way, perhaps even just enjoying the photo of something so very far away and so very lovely, maybe I just don't know what is. And that's just about it for today's show. I hope you enjoyed it. I have been your hostess, Jenna. I have loved having you listen, and I really do appreciate the letters and comments. It's very sweet of you all to take the time. Join me next week for show number 33. I'll find some more cool or strange or informative bits to share with you, and maybe even have a guest. Wouldn't that be fun? Until then, remember to take this advice because it's very, very good. Forgive yourself and be happy. Good day.